From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White, in today for Beth Ruyak. And we want to give you this advisory right off the top. The first segment is a difficult one, but it's an important topic, but it might not be appropriate for all listeners. You've surely seen the headlines. Earlier this week, the Sacramento Catholic Diocese released the names of 44 priests, two deacons, who the church says can credibly be listed as abusers of 130 children and young adults up to the age of 25. Nearly half of those sexually abused were the victims of just three priests. This information comes from an examination of approximately 1,500 personnel records spanning at least seven decades, starting in 1950. The reviewers of those records are said to be staff of the diocese and an independent consulting firm. Joining us now in the studio is Sacramento-based attorney Joe George. He's founding partner of the law offices of Joseph C. George and has represented clergy sexual abuse victims for several decades. We really appreciate you being here on Insight to help us understand the weight of this week's released list of names.
My pleasure. Thank you, Randall.
Now, the Sacramento Diocese list, as I said in the introduction, Joe, included 44 priests and two deacons. Is there a particular reason why the diocese is doing this now?
That's an interesting question. Bishop Soto indicated in his public relations release through Kevin Eckery, their media person, that they are trying to recover the trust of Catholics in the public by beginning with the accounting of what happened in the past. Curiously, Bishop Soto has been the Bishop of Sacramento for 11 years, so I don't know why this thought didn't occur to him sometime in the past. As a matter of fact, Bishop Soto was the auxiliary bishop in the Diocese of Orange to Bishop Todd Brown from 2000 to 2007. So he is steeped in the misconduct of the Catholic Church hierarchy. Why did he wait? That's, for me, it's a rhetorical question. They waited till now because of the release of the Pennsylvania Grand Jury Report. Mm-hmm. So the Pennsylvania Grand Jury Report, which was made public in this last August, just excoriated the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. It's deplorable conduct. As soon as that was released, attorney generals across the country indicated an interest and willingness to get involved in the diocese within their state. And our own attorney general reached out to victims of child sexual abuse in general, not just clergy child sexual abuse, to file reports, I think, to try to cut the legs out from the attorney generals. The bishops across the country now have come up with this plan to release lists of credibly accused perpetrators.
Do you believe it's a complete list?
No, not at all.
What leads you to think that?
Well, you know, historically, what we talk about with child molesters, and it applies to the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, has been to deny, minimize, and blame. They're very, very, very skilled at that. The list, if you want to specify, focus just on the list released here in the Diocese of Sacramento, it's very curious that Bishop Soto's focus was 44 priests and two deacons, okay?
How so?
That means no nuns, no Christian brothers, no lay teachers, no coaches, no volunteers in schools. In fact, no one in schools except priests. And the priests aren't in the schools here.
And of the three priests that have the highest number of accusations, two are now in Mexico and one is deceased. Is that right?
Blanco's dead. Father Blanco's dead. And you're speaking, I guess, about Beltran and Garcia. They're both fugitives. We represented, so curiously, the numbers are minimized in Soto's report. One way they minimized it was not include all that other group, right? That's one way. They list, I think, like over 50, 55, 60, quote, victims of Blanco, Garcia, and Beltran. We've represented over 50 of those guys, almost all Hispanic males, all children.
The victims.
The victims. Mm-hmm. All children of relatively poor, mostly itinerant farm workers up and down the valley. And these perpetrators had carte blanche with the kids. The families would be thrilled that Father Garcia was spending time with their child, inviting their child to spend the night, giving their child gifts, bestowing them with meals. So one less mouth to feed, in effect. One less mouth to feed, excuse me.
Yeah, we say the Sacramento Diocese, but it's really large. Can you help us understand the geographic boundaries of the diocese?
Yeah, Sacramento is much larger than you would think. I think there are over a million parishioners. It runs up. It doesn't have the coastline. Santa Rosa runs up the coastline, Eureka, up that way. But otherwise, it's Sacramento runs up to Oregon and cuts over to Nevada. There are a lot of rural areas that have never been scrutinized, if you ask me. And I know because I've been around since doing it since, you know, the early 90s. So in other words, then they'll get a report on, let's say, a Father Delgado from Susanville. He was in Susanville. One known victim, okay? Child abuse. He came from south of Lodi, and we know that he would bring a kid, quote, nephew from Mexico who was staying with him in Lodi before he wound up in Susanville. So the claim actually comes from when he was in Sacramento, not Susanville. But he'd been up in Susanville in these rural areas for years and years and years, okay? Psychological evidence, psychiatric evidence, medical evidence would indicate that pedophiles, sexual abusers, are recidivists.
Okay. Meaning they repeat the act over and over.
And repeat, yeah. And repeat. Some way more aggressive than others, like Garcia and Beltran and Blanco. They would never pass up an opportunity to sexually abuse a kid if they had access to the kid. Others may be not quite that aggressive. But to make believe that the numbers on these perpetrators are only two or three victims is make-believe.
Now, the list was put together, as we said, by the diocese staff and an independent consulting firm. What do you know about that firm?
The firm was involved, I think, in the John Jay study, and she's some sort of consultant, former FBI something. The diocese, all the dioceses love former FBI people. It somehow lends an air of credibility, they think. Again, the focus, though, is minimizing. And to take a step back again, the other day we had a press conference with a young man, I'm giving my age here, but he was like 45, 47. And he was a whistleblower on Brother Farrington and Jesuit in 1987. Farrington pulled him out of a class, molested him. He came back into the class, told his teacher, told his parents that night. The parents the next day met with Diocese of Sacramento. And then the following day, Brother Farrington was dispatched out of Jesuit for, quote, personal reasons. Farrington's not on this list.
And so
he's an acknowledged perp. And Bishop Soto, I understand that the reason is, well, we didn't list brothers. So we're not listing. I mean, Jesuit's a high profile, a great school here locally. And the Jesuits, by and large, are great order and doing great things. But we have a serial sexual abuser, Farrington, who's been omitted. I know nuns sexually abused girls at St. Francis, probably Loretto. I know we have a case that's been in the media in the last year here, softball coach, Michael Martis, was prosecuted, sexually abused our client at St. Francis. No coaches are listed. No lay teachers are listed. If I was a Catholic, I was born and raised Catholic, educated Catholic, wouldn't I want to know what's going on in the Catholic schools where my kids go? They've completely omitted data from the Catholic schools. Now, do we think that's going to keep the numbers down and to help frame the picture so that it looks like it's not quite as extensive as it is? Yes.
We're speaking with Sacramento-based attorney Joe George, who represents victims of clergy sexual abuse. What about future prosecutions? Joe, where do we stand with those?
Hopeful. To take a step back and look at Bishop Soto's statement, and these are statements, you know, again, across the country.
And these are his statements that came out at the time that this list was released?
Correct. He uses words like evil acts, sins and failures. Now, we've had access to personnel files back into the 60s and 70s and 80s. They love euphemisms, they being the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. They talk about poor decisions, inappropriate behaviors. These are crimes. Criminal child sexual abuse is child sexual abuse. These are criminal acts. And to cover up criminal acts is criminal, if you ask me. So we are thrilled that our attorney general, I think in September, this last September, October, sent out a request for reports of child sexual abuse to be made to the attorney general. Okay, we're thrilled, and we're hopeful that our attorney general's office will get in the act, because the last thing in the world that the bishops want in California and across the country is for law enforcement to start issuing subpoenas and warrants to get into their files. Because I'm telling you, I'm a civil lawyer, and since the late 80s and 90s, all we do is get stonewalled. They destroy. They've never known ever anything about any priest who's ever sexually abused.
And as I understand it, just this week, the attorney general in Georgia is doing just what you're hoping you'll see in California.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Pope Francis has placed a lot of emphasis on solving the problem of predatory priests. He has had any level of success, in your opinion, that you can determine?
I haven't been intimately involved or focused on what Pope Francis does. He's a charismatic, charming individual who always has said this right thing since he got in there and sort of gave a ray of hope. I think little has actually been done to take it back several decades. You know, Rome thought that the problem was created by the American media, that the problem was limited to the United States, and it was American media, and it's those darn bishops over in America who can't control the media anymore. That's the problem. We wouldn't be having this conversation, I should add, and these historic developments wouldn't be occurring but for the courage of the sexual abuse survivors
coming forward,
who've spoken. Yeah. And SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, and the people at Bishop Accountability have just been fabulous. They're the gutsy people.
We should mention that you're an attorney now, but you have a psychology background, correct?
I'm also a licensed psychologist.
Yeah,
I was a licensed psychologist in the early 80s. I was a psychologist first before I went to law school. And I know a little bit about psychology.
And, you know, you mentioned that this is a decades-old problem. So for many of the victims, their abusers have either passed away or are living in other countries, as we mentioned earlier. How do they find any sense of, I know that's a term that a lot of people don't like, but closure?
What I think most folks are looking for is some sort of recognition of accountability. Mm-hmm. And
so, whether that's by the church or by the abusers.
Yeah, the abusers ring hollow, frankly. And you know, again, the diocese and the bishops across the country have always talked about, well, there are always a couple of bad apples there. Every group has a bad apples. The bad apples here is the corporate policy. It was corporate criminal behavior that's deplorable conduct by the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, moving these perps around and not warning parents and kids. And their number one goal was to avoid scandal and save money. And that's what they did.
Do you see the culture changing in the United States in favor of the victims?
Yes. I think that, you know, it's interesting because I've lived through it somewhat. I was, you know, again, I was born, raised, educated Catholic. I wasn't sexually abused by clergy, but part of my affinity for this work is I could easily have been a victim. my son went to Catholic school. We could easily be a victim.
Did you see signs of it, but you were able to, you know, get yourself out of that situation?
You know, I thought about that some. And, you know, I'm old, so I went to high school in the late 60s. And I remember being cornered in a it was his office, chemistry teacher's office. And he was sort of pushing me up against the wall. I went in to complain about a grade, I think, in chemistry, right? So I was a junior in high school. And he was like moving in on me. And I remember being squirmish and going out. At the time, it never occurred to me that maybe he was going to pin me up against the wall and I was going to feel his hard penis rubbing up against me.
But looking back now.
Looking back now, it's like, what was that motive? It's almost like hearing women talk about Joe Biden hugging them. Like, you know, it
you
didn't feel comfortable.
Factor, right.
It didn't feel comfortable. It was, you know, a little too inappropriate. And so.
What was the turning point, do you think? We were talking about the culture changing. Of course, there was that Academy Award winning film about the work done
Spotlight.
By the Boston Globe. Was there anything here on the West Coast that you would see as a turning point?
Well, we had our own open window for the statute of limitations in 2003. So that was extraordinary because in my work, I would get my brains pounded for years losing cases based upon the statute of limitations. We would lose again and again and again. And gradually the legislature helped by extending the statute of limitations. And then we had an open window in 2003. There were 1,000 claims filed in the state, almost all against the Catholic Church. We had Episcopal cases too, but almost all against the Catholic Church. Then it was like Catholic Church was like, oh my God, we're out of business. What are we going to do? And then those cases got resolved. And then a curious thing happened, like over the next 5 years, is the calls didn't stop.
Oh.
And so then I would say, like, well, did you know there was a window in 2003? But the nature of the abuse, it's a psychological abuse, and that's where it fits in with my psychology background, is sort of box it up and put it away. And if something triggers it later, we'll deal with it later. But in the meantime, leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot more of those folks now, because of the publicity, frankly, and some of the publicity, you know, I've thought about it. And we went through 03, and there was this grand jury I just mentioned. But back in like 05 or 07, there was a Philadelphia grand jury. I'm from Philadelphia. And she was a Jewish district attorney. She got all the Catholics in the office to head up the grand jury. Jill Abraham, she's a judge now. And it was excoriating report against the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. Again, I that's where I am from.
Right.
It sort of fell on deaf ears. It just went away. Then I remember a couple years later, I was vacationing I was in New York for reasons, and Jerry Sandusky's story broke.
Right.
And I'm from Pennsylvania, so I know Penn State football. But Sandusky's abuse of his kids, he adopted, he had a lot of foster kids, received far more, it was a different audience. It expanded. And then over the years, we have U.S. Gymnastics with Larry Nassar, Bill Cosby stuff, Harvey Weissman stuff.
Right.
And women, frankly, that I've spoken to 10 years ago about being molested in clergy, these clergy cases, they'd say, well, he only felt my breasts. That's the same thing the boys tried when they were in high school, too. They have a different attitude today. It's more like, you know, that shouldn't happen.
It's noticeably changed.
Noticeably changed.
That's Sacramento-based attorney Joe George, who represents victims of clergy sexual abuse. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us here on Insight today.
My pleasure, Randall. Appreciate it.
And we do have more on the website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight. This is your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.